Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
As the race between vaccines, variants, and a potential fourth coronavirus surge rages on, another, much more deadly virus grabbed headlines last week. Ebola. Today, a look at what we know about the concerning news out of Oregon and Ohio, the level of risk to the general public, and how our fight against COVID-19 has us more prepared to battle viruses we know about and those we don't. It is Tuesday, March 30th. I'm Ian Costello, and this is Beyond the Headlines on the COIN Podcast Network. Reporter Lisa Baylett covers infectious diseases for COIN 6 News. I caught up with her as word began to spread that four people in Oregon were being monitored for potential exposure to Ebola. So just to be clear, Lisa, nobody in Oregon actually has Ebola.
That's right. That's what the state health leaders are saying. In fact, when I checked, there has never been a case of Ebola in Oregon ever. Back in 2014, when there was essentially an epidemic in parts of Africa, there was somebody here in Oregon who they thought was a possible case, but it turned out it was not Ebola.
So we've got these four people that they're monitoring. What does monitoring actually entail?
State Health Department was notified, first of all, by CDC, because earlier in March, the CDC essentially said, look, we've got to make sure we keep an eye on what's happening, what's coming into this country. So the CDC decided that if anybody was flying into the U.S. from certain parts of Africa, in this case, the Democratic Republic of Congo and Guinea, they would have to come through six large airports, designated airports, into the country. And then at those sites, they would be taken aside, asked a lot of questions, contact tracing information, where they had been in the country, who they had been around, basically starting the data gathering at that point before then they went ahead to their final destination. That information then is passed along to state and county health departments where their final destination was. And that's how the state was informed that these four people had traveled in the month of March to these particular countries in West Africa.
Following the announcement from the Oregon Health Authority that four people in Oregon were being monitored for Ebola, Dr. Richard Lehman, the state's chief medical officer for health security, preparedness, and response, answered some questions during a phone conference for the media.
State county health departments reached out to them, made contact with them, basically informed them, look, you need to, you know, be monitoring for symptoms at home, essentially, you know, stay there for 21 days.
Typically after exposure, the range of when people are going to get sick, if they actually were exposed and if they're going to get sick, it's going to be within 2 and 21 days. It's usually closer to a week after exposure is the more typical situation. And it typically presents with a fever, which is often pretty high, muscle aches, and shaking chills.
And there's nobody actually physically going into where their homes, but the state and county keep checking with them on a regular basis to see what's happening with them.
Public health will be working with them to make sure that they have the support that they need and so that they can get care quickly. And if they get sick, that they don't expose other people.
Do we have any idea who these people are, why they were there, why did they travel there, did they quarantine when they got back? What do we know about these people and what they were doing?
Those are all the questions we asked at the news conference that the Oregon Health Authority put on, where they presented one doctor who talked briefly about the fact that these four people have been identified and monitored. They refused to answer any of those questions.
At this point, we are not issuing specific information about age and county and so on, because we feel it's important to protect people's privacy.
And in response as to why they wouldn't provide any information, they said, well, it's a confidentiality matter. We don't want these people to then be identified, perhaps being, in their words, persecuted.
There's no practical use. The public doesn't need that information in order to protect themselves in that situation. And that's where we are right now. We have to balance putting out lots of information with what happens if people have lots of specific information. It could lead to people getting identified. And if that results in those people getting a huge crush of media attention at a time they really don't want it, that's not fair. It's not something any of us want. And so we have to try to make sure that doesn't happen.
So there were basically four personal reasons for these folks keeping the information confidential. However, I checked around and found that in Ohio, there are also more than 40 people who had traveled to these countries and were back now and were also being monitored and had been identified. And in that case, the counties had been identified by the public health departments. So the question clearly is raised that, you know, somebody who was on the news conference said, look, you know, I'm over in Eastern Oregon. Can you at least let us know that, hey, this is not anything to think about, be concerned about, to at least give us some geographic areas to where these people are currently? And the state said no.
You talk about concern. What do the state health officials have to say about the risks of anyone actually contracting Ebola? Is there community concern here at all?
They say no. In fact, the question was asked, if it's no, then why are you holding a news conference? And they said, well, we want to be transparent.
We didn't want the media, we didn't want the public to think we're like holding anything back. That's not what we do. But we also think it's important that people understand that the risk is very low. This is not a big deal. Public health is basically taking steps to keep it that way, to make sure it stays not a big deal.
Obviously, information was out there that people had traveled and had come back. And so they wanted to essentially get ahead of it and say, yes, we are aware of these people and we are, you know, monitoring them and providing them with the information they need to know of what to be aware of, what to look for. As far as the transmission of it, I asked, well, what about, let's say, you know, you're somebody on an airplane and may have been sitting next to them and not knowing that. You clearly would be concerned not knowing a lot. You know, what about airline passengers without giving us any information as to when they traveled, what airline, what time, what day, where they were coming from to get back to Portland? You know, there would be concern among people.
Minimal risk, no risk, essentially, to people who were traveling on the plane with these folks unless the person became ill.
There's a big difference between Ebola as a virus and COVID as a virus. COVID is highly contagious from air droplets, water droplets in the air, and transmission that way. This particular virus is strictly through intimate contact.
It's a nasty disease. You don't want to get it, but it's a lot less contagious. The main way that you get this is if you're exposed to the blood or body fluid of somebody who is ill.
So the fact that you sat next to somebody, they say you're not going to get it from them.
As we're hearing about Ebola, kind of as we're turning the corner or feel like we're turning the corner on coronavirus, what are some of the other important distinctions between the two?
Well, in terms of doing a little research on it, Ebola, the death rate is tremendously high. More than 50% of people who get it die from it. And there is actually a vaccine currently. I asked whether or not these people had been vaccinated, and the state health authorities said that we don't have that information, which I find a little difficult to believe. Based on that would be a question I would assume you would ask them in the first little bit. But that be as it may, it's not something that, you know, you're regularly vaccinated against.
Right.
And that vaccine, since it's a fairly new vaccine, has been recommended for people who work with people who have Ebola, people in a healthcare setting. And again, we don't know whether these people were working in some kind of a mission capacity or were they specifically healthcare workers doing research over there? Were they people of family there? We don't know.
And I'm not going to get into specifics of each person, but basically we've got several groups of folks who might fall into this category. There are folks who are from Oregon and who may have decided to volunteer or their staff members for an organization that's providing care or support, medical care or missionaries or groups like that.
We learned a lot about ways to control a virus over the last year, kind of beaten into our heads, the masks and social distancing and the reduction of travel. Did Oregon Health Authority bring up anything in regards to, we kind of feel like we would be prepared for an Ebola outbreak or frankly, any new virus outbreak, we're more prepared now because of what we went through with coronavirus?
I had reached out on my own to a doctor at Oregon Health and Science University.
As an assistant professor at OHSU, Dr. Bill Messer studies viruses and infectious diseases.
He actually was the one who said to me that based on all the work that's been done in the hospitals day after day after day for well over a year now with PPE, with safeguards, learning as you go, he feels very optimistic. He said at this point that the experiences in working with COVID patients, especially early on compared to now, protocols that have been established locally, nationally, worldwide, he feels that we are much better prepared if there is a case of this severe virus to basically handle that case.
It still would be a public health nightmare. But we've been practicing public health nightmare or preventing one in this state for a year now. And I think it's a totally different landscape.
I remember several years ago when there was a suspected case in Oregon. Again, it turned out it was not Ebola that the person had. But there was just tremendous concern over where would they have that person go for care? Where would they put them for treatment? And what kind of protection was needed to make sure those who are caring for this person, you know, didn't become infected? And the OHSU doctor said, look, we have just learned so much. We are so far better prepared now than we ever were in the past based on all the protocols. I mean, even just beyond masking and all those basic things that, you know, doctors normally would do anyway, but all kinds of standard protocols around, you know, highly contagious disease patients that he thinks we are in much better shape right now if indeed there was ever a case of Ebola here.
I imagine that we have learned so much since then about how to deal with these contagious and dangerous diseases. It sort of opened up a new way of thinking about, okay, if this is really an Ebola case, or if we really have an Ebola case, we're going to be so much better at managing this in spite of the fact that we're in the middle of another pandemic.
Safe to say that the last year, year and a half, this last period of time that we've gone through, we're better prepared medically for anything that would come our way, virally at least.
Yes. Again, he felt when I asked him, you know, to hear that there were some people being monitored to see if they developed Ebola here in Oregon, he said the words that, you know, initially he was scared and optimistic. Scared in the sense of this is, you know, a highly deadly virus, which if unchecked, you know, could lead to an epidemic. And that's obviously not the case. Even in Africa, there have been, you know, several deaths, but even there, they're not saying it's an epidemic and they're trying best they can to control it. But he felt that if indeed, you know, there was something of that serious nature, he felt optimistic based on the experiences of the past year or so of handling far more infectious disease patients than we've ever seen.
OHA didn't give any reason that John Q. Public should be concerned at all.
No, they said the risk is extremely low. And again, these people were identified as soon as they came back into the country and informed by the CDC at that point before they even got to Oregon, hey, look, here's what's going to happen. And, you know, you do need to isolate and you'll be put in contact with state and county public health as soon as you arrive. And again, these people were told do not have any symptoms. You need to have symptoms showing in order to transmit.
You know, one of the key features about Ebola virus transmission is that it really isn't thought to occur in people who are asymptomatic, which is something that separates it from SARS-CoV-2 or COVID, where we, you know, learned at some point fairly early in the epidemic that preclinical transmission or pre-symptomatic transmission was a thing that could really make a lot of trouble and has.
There's no asymptomatic transmission of Ebola that they know of.
Correct.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Ian.
When we come back, a word about heroes, little girls, and something you may have missed in your newsfeed last week.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the COIN Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report on demand and on your schedule. So check out the COIN Podcast Network on COIN.com or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the COIN Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back. As the father of a nine-month-old little girl, I can't imagine there are many stranger things than raising a newborn during a pandemic. It certainly comes with a unique set of circumstances. The monotony of each day, virtually stuck at home, is tough for any parent. The long-range social effects on any child, my daughter among them, remain to be seen. The old saying goes that you should never meet your heroes, because, among other things, their reality will never equal your expectations. I had a pleasure of meeting one of mine the day I was born, and I still talk to my dad, either by text or by phone, several times a week. He is, and always has been, one of my heroes. I am happy to hope that I am already, and if not, one day will be, a hero for my daughter. And I am sad that my daughter will never get to meet Beverly Cleary. The well-known children's author and Portland icon passed away last week at the age of 104. Long before Simpsons creator Matt Groening gave us Mayor Joe Quimby, named after the street that runs through Northwest Portland, Cleary gave us Ramona Quimby. The lessons that Cleary taught hundreds of thousands of girls through Ramona's adventures may never be more important than they are today. They are the lessons I want my daughter to learn. Be brave. Be tough. Be yourself. And most of all, take each day, no matter how monotonous, and make it extraordinary. Lessons we all could take to heart. Right now. That will do it for us today. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.